Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Creative Superheroes Podcast. This show is designed to inspire you to cultivate your creative superpowers, which is to say, I want you to feel more brave, more alive, and more connected to your gifts and your spirit. This is your host, Andrea Shearer. Welcome to the show. Hello, everyone. It's me. I'm so glad to have you. As always, thank you for listening to the Creative Superheroes Podcast. Today, I am so totally delighted because we have someone here who is an expert in relationship and dating and attachment theory and all these things that have been flooding around in my mind for, you know, for years now. But he's going to bring us some really grounded science and insight around these things. And who we have here is Gary Salyer. Dr. Gary Salyer is a master relationship coach who helps people rewrite the rules for love in their brains. He's a featured expert on various TV and radio shows such as Hay House Radio. And he's also the author of the forthcoming book, Safe to Love Again, How to Release the Pain of Past Relationships and Create the Love You Deserve. Dr. Gary offers a unique blend of neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, Bert Hellinger's family systems approach, and attachment theory, which we'll be discussing, as I mentioned. And you can find out more about him at GarySalyer.com. Welcome, Gary. So happy to have you.
Well, thank you for having me, Andrea.
Yeah.
Hey. Yes.
And, me too. So this idea of attachment theory has been kind of a buzz lately, and it was a real revelation for me when I heard about it. And so I'm wondering if you can just give us a little primer on that to start.
I would love to. Attachment theory actually started right after World War II, and a psychiatrist by the name of John Bowlby was working in the orphanage of children who had typically, right after the bombings in London, had lost both parents. And though they were fed and they were cared for and sheltered, you know, many of them were dying. Mm-hmm. And people couldn't figure out why. There was no good reason. And Bowlby came up with the shocking idea at the time that they were dying for lack of attachment. Mm. And you got to understand that after his death, his wife, Ursula, wrote a memoir and said that John always wanted to call it love theory, but he was afraid of being mocked out of the guild by the Freudians. So he needed something British and stiff upper lip. Called it attachment theory. And it was literally, though, he was trying to say they're dying because they don't feel loved.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. And he was the one that noticed that for humans to thrive, we need a bond. A really close bond. We need to know that someone is going to be our safe haven. They're going to be our secure base of love. And we can be an I, but we are surrounded by an empowering we. And without that we, no I feels safe. Mm. That's what Bowlby is. And that's what attachment theory is about. It's not just about the I. It's about the we, the bond we all need to feel safe, and that allows us to become our very best I.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, there are sort of two main categories, right? The sort of secure and insecure, is that right?
Yeah, well, you know, attachment theory literally has four. The ones, there's secure, and the secure I define one beautiful couple that was on my stage had been married 55 years together. I asked them, you know, what it is, and says, oh, I take no BS and I give no BS. They are comfortable being in a secure relation, giving love and receiving. They expect to be received and loved as well. The two other dominant ones are anxious and avoidant. Somewhere early on, the anxious, they had a bond and it was not there. And a bond, it was not there. And a bond, it was not there. And they say, I'm going to fight to lock this down. And they're the ones that show up. You didn't text me back within 10 minutes. Where were you last night? You know, and they're very anxious and they tend to be drama and they're always afraid when love rolls away. Mm. The avoidance, they didn't get much of a bond at all. So they're assuming it's not going to be there. So they tone down all of their emotions because they're not expecting anything there. And so they show up as, not present or Mr. and Ms. I can't commit or won't commit, their worst fear isn't that love will go away. Their worst fear is that love will show up and ask them for a commitment.
Yeah.
There's a fourth one, which gets more into mental illness, but the three dominant ones, you're secure, you're anxious, you're avoidant, and most of us have a little bit of all three.
Yes, I feel like I can relate to all three as I've been kind of delving into this topic. And I most associate myself with anxious. I tend to need a lot of affirmation and a lot of connection. And if anything goes awry, I'm convinced that it's all over. But what I've done, I think, maybe cleverly, is I've adopted some avoidant behaviors to manage my anxiety. And I don't know if that's common. It's like I've learned to like play it cool and try to not need too much and try to fill my life in ways that are like allow me to not need a partner so that I don't have to feel that anxiety or sort of need something that someone may not give me.
Yeah. Well, I call it the preemptive strike.
Yes.
Yes. It's called situational avoidance. What feels better? Getting in a relationship and feeling, oh my God, they're going to go away, going to go away. Or like, you know, I'll be cool hand, Luke. I won't need that. But then some part says, you know, doesn't it suck that we had to give up a relationship to feel good?
Yeah, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, because there's a way that wanting connection, wanting attention, wanting love from someone and not getting it feels so much worse than deciding that you don't need it or want it in the first place.
Yes. If I can't have what I want, I'll give up what I want.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ugh.
And usually that's about a four-year-old talking within us.
Oh God, that's where I'm at. I'm at a four-year-old developmental level. Oh my goodness. Well, so that brings me to this sort of notion that we can feel a lot of shame about our attachment style, especially if it's insecure.
Yes. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book and why I do the work. The thing that is, you know, when Attached came out with Amir Levine's book about 10 years ago, people started saying, oh, I'm anxious or I'm avoidant or I'm secure. Woohoo! You know, right. And basically that and $5 will get you something at Starbucks.
Yeah, right.
It's not real helpful. And what it does for 50% of the population is it makes us feel wrong. Mm. But at some point, Andrea, that was the very best deal available. And no part of your brain is wrong for taking the best deal available. The thing is our attachment systems, which are perpetually, by the way, our attachment brain is going to always be about 5 years old. When I work with clients, they can get into all this Abraham stuff and they, oh, I don't want a positive vibration. And that's beautiful for the front part of your brain. But for the back part of your brain, it's like, how would a five-year-old say that? Oh, I just want a playmate. Bingo. Mm. That part of the brain at some point is meant to adapt because Mother Nature had the stinking suspicion that not everybody would be born into optimal conditions. So at one point in time, toning it down and becoming avoidant was the best deal possible. It's better than feeling all that pain and all that loneliness before your brain even knows how to deal with it. Or if you're anxious, at some point in time, it worked and that was the best deal. What we want to do is give that part of your brain a better deal. So it'll take it and work for you. So it's working. It's working its butt off. It's just working with old protocols.
Okay, so does this sort of segue into your Safe to Love Again workshops?
It does. And the book that's kind of been written on basis of what I was doing there. You know, I there's no sense making you wrong. I mean, you know, I grew up with a borderline mother. Mm. So being anxious and being on the lookout for when things are going to go wrong was a very, very good strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very real.
It's very real. If you weren't looking out, you were going to get beat. And so the better deal was to go, whoa, I'm going to do that. Now, if you flash forward 30 years and you're in a marriage and you're wondering when is she, you know, she going to start beating on me verbally or, you know, and I wasn't looking for it so much physically, that's not a good deal.
Right. Exactly.
That's not a good deal. And So what, you know, for your listeners out there, we just want to point out that your brain, nothing is wrong with your brain. It's working perfectly well. All we want to do with an anxious or an avoidant lifestyle is to give it a better deal. And if we can give it a better deal on its terms of what it considers safe, if we can find the exact flavor of what safety looked like a long time ago and tie it to the love dreams you have now, that part of your brain will gladly take it. And so we like that part of your brain because it's working constantly to keep you on the planet. It just needs a little bit of an upgrade. Nothing's wrong.
Okay, this is great. Okay, so what would a better deal look like for, you know, for an anxiously attached person, for example?
Well, a better deal, you know, like for instance, this is one I used in the book. She came to me some years ago, and she was always anxious, because she never had a right to belong. Okay. A right to belong.
Oh, a right to belong. Family,
Dad was an alcoholic and Mom was self-obsessed. So she was always like, go away, go away, go over there. And she was dying to have a partner in the we, right? So what we had to do was go back. But if you belong, you got what happened to belong. As much as she wanted, the other part of her brain was saying, remember the last time we belonged and we either got beat on by Dad? So when she got, some part of her was always actually picking men who would actually give her a reason not to belong because they didn't feel safe to belong.
Right.
Once we got her safe with belonging, then she could get, and she got out of this really bad relationship. And now she's very happily married with someone who actually allows her to belong. And the funny thing is when she picked this man, he started working with me and they started having little problems because he didn't have a full right to really step up and what we call create your own experience. And it was getting in the way of their relationship because when he was a little to creating your own experience, we'd get squashed by both Mom and Dad. When we went back and helped him reclaim a right to create his experience, he could show up in a way that allowed her to belong. And when she belonged, she would empower him and their relationship took off. And now they're creating a beautiful organization for children together. That's what safety looks like. That's what safety looks like.
Yeah. So, okay. So there's a few things in there that I would love for you to expand on. I'm not sure what you mean by a right to create an experience or even a right to belong. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. I probably should have mentioned that first. The book, I argue that, you know, people say there's secure, anxious, and avoidant love styles. Bingo. Great. What does that mean? What I argue is that it's like a molecule that has six atoms, and these six atoms are between 0 and 3, our brain learns we get 6 rights, and we can call them permission slips. We can call them templates or cookie cutters. These are rights. There's a right to exist, and the right to exist where you're given full permission to be an embodied self, and you can be at home in your body so that you can have your feelings and your thoughts and your body, and you don't have to separate and live as a spiritual being or an intellectual. You have a full right to have your needs met, to reach out, to request for your needs met, and to know the world is going to give you an abundant response back. There is a right to separate and belong, and that's not separate or belong. It's I get to be a me. And I get to be a we, like a little toddler has a parent looking over them, me and we. So you get the right to be beautifully supported and in an empowering we, not a stifling we. There's a right to create your own experience, which means I have a right to be fully human. Brené Brown, I get to have a good side and a bad side. I get to be flawed and fabulous and loved. But I get to create my own experience. And I get a right to assert as well, which means I can speak up my voice and choice. And the sixth right is I have a right to love and be loved, not a right to just be loved, or a right to just love, but to love and be loved. And that includes sexuality as well. So you can have hot and husband, or hot and a beautiful partner, all in the same package. And if you have all six of these rights, and these rights then are used as templates to create every other experience in love and life. If you have all six, you will feel welcomed with joy, worthy and nourished, cherished and protected, and empowered with choice, and lovable. If you feel those four feelings, you have a secure love style, and you have those rights. If you are missing any of them, your system will inevitably opt for anxious or avoidant. So the key to getting your brain to attract and create a secure relationship that has all of the bells and whistles of really good love is to go back and find out what right was missing, and to give your brain back those rights. And when it does, it starts when you have a right to be, say you don't have a right to be worthy. I mean, it means you will inevitably attract a taker, or you'll create that dynamic in your relationship. Once you have that right, your brain says, then we will no longer pick Mr. Wrong, and Mr. Taker stops showing up because it's got a full set of rights. Suddenly, the whole relationship with you and your beloved changes. That's what it means to recover. Give yourself back all of the rights so you can reclaim all of your birthright as a human being.
That's so beautiful. And so do you do that through therapy or inquiry, or is it just noticing and naming, like, oh wow, I didn't get to have that, now I'm gonna repair it myself in a certain way and love myself and tell myself that I get to have that? Like, how do you do it?
Well, basically, it's not just, you know, telling and working with the human part of it. It's going, oh, that's more education, Andrea. I work with an NLP model versus the normal therapeutic model, although I've been trained, I work with couples as well, you know, and I've done all the research and training with that. But what we do is we go back to the little one and we add resources. We use something called NLP called re-imprinting. And when there's re-imprinting, when we pull up that unworthy state or that fit part that says I can't be cherished or I can't be empowered, and we start adding resources to it at the same time. Remember, an NLP, what wires together, fires together. Mm-hmm. Once you add those resources, the brain says, oh, I can be safe. And then it takes a better option.
And for people who don't know what NLP is, what is that?
It's called neuro-linguistic programming. Probably have heard about it in Tony Robbins. There's some kind of really bad stuff out there, but the stuff I'm trained in is really deep, really, we get in real rapport with your brain. No part of your brain was wrong. It just needs a few resources added. And the great thing is when it takes that better deal, it starts looking. Right now, you know, when someone's anxious, they're, you know, the human part of them, the prefrontal cortex up front, the part that says, hi, I'm Andrea, or I'm Gary, or I'm Ted, or I'm Susie, says, you know, I would really like a secure person that really gives to me, right? But this other part that's not safe with giving says, I better go find what I breathed through before, because all it knows how to do, safe equals survival, and survival says, did I breathe through unworthy? Oh, we better lock that in. We better go find another person. That's your reptile brain. It only knows, it would rather find what it's already breathed through than something new. When you go into therapy or you go into a workshop, your reptile brain is kind of looking at what's going on and going, you know, I think the neighbors are up to something. But if we can go back and give it this new feeling and this new flavor, then it gets 2 million bits of information every second. It will start scanning the environment for its new set of rights. And the cool thing is, it's like one guy I worked with in the Midwest. I had been speaking back there and he signed up to work with me. He said to me, I'm always attracting drama queens. And he himself was an anxious. Now, what was really interesting, after about 5 or 6 sessions, we gave him back a full right to have his needs met. Right. And he started reclaiming that secure, I don't have to wait for love goes away. And he calls me up one day and he says, Gary, something weird's going on. He says, it's not just an I'm attracted to a different woman. He says, I don't know what's going on. He says, all these women who have their stuff together are suddenly attracted to me. And that's never happened before. He says, what's going on? And I said, because you're now secure. Their scanners are not set for games. So now that they know you're not going to give them this game or this missing right, they're now attracted to you. That's how it works. He was attracted to Better, and so were the people who were attracted to him.
That's so cool. And the sort of woo-woo part of me is like, is this like law of attraction stuff, like vibration? And like, is there any sort of relationship to that kind of stuff? I feel like you could talk about this in a sort of variety of ways.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think this is just the neurological understanding of the law of attraction. What I tell any single couple eventually that works with me is the universe, and this kind of comes from Abraham himself, the universe isn't punishing. It's not rewarding either. It's mirroring. It's mirroring. And the neurological reason is the secure. I mean, I can still remember this woman, her name was Sylvia. She'd been on my stage, and she and Ira had been married 55 years. And I asked her, so what's your 1 second soundbite? She goes, oh, it's easy. I take no BS and I give no BS. And trust me, she didn't, you know. Mm-hmm. She's not wired to be attracted to someone that she senses BS from. So, you know, and now I'll tell you something. It was her husband died a few years after that. And I've been really good friends with her. And she went through a grief process, and now she's 80 years old, and we have a conversation, but she is secure. She knows she has a right to love and be loved. And she calls me one day. She goes, Garrett, she goes, I think I've done my work. I've done my grieving. I'm 80. And she goes, I think I've got 10, 15 years of good love and life left in me. She goes, if you see a guy in his late 60s or 70s that's got some life and the ability to love, she says, you just send him my way.
Aw, that's awesome.
Why? Because her brain knows she's got it right. None of this stuff, I'm too old to be loved. None of this stuff, there's no good ones out there. None of that. Her brain has the right it's seeking for.
I love that. Well, when I was thinking about the whole idea of the, like, the universe being a mirror, not punishing or anything, but being a mirror for us, I'm thinking about, so before I read Attached and before I understood attachment theory, I was in this relationship that was very much a classic sort of anxious, avoidant relationship. And when we were having a completion conversation at the end of this relationship, I found myself saying something kind of bold. I said, you know, do you want to hear what my experience of this relationship was? And he said, yes. And I said, this relationship showed me what I'm never going to choose again. And his eyes got kind of big. And I said, I'm never again choosing someone who, when I take a step toward them, they take a step back. And what I was sort of declaring to the universe, I think, in that moment was like, I'm jumping a track and I'm not going to do this the way that I've always done it. And yeah, and then it was so funny. And then also simultaneously, there's a sort of mysterious kind of spirit voice that comes in every once in a while, like maybe a handful of times in my whole life. And it came in actually in that moment, and it said, and by the way, we're not chasing men anymore. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I didn't really know what that voice was about. And I was reflecting on it later. And it was just like the idea of like, oh yeah, like something about that anxious style was like, it was always me in pursuit mode and moving toward, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna relax a little bit and be grounded in who I am and in my own, like you were saying, like one of those rights, like my own right to have my needs met and be loved and all of that. And I'm not going to be chasing anymore. And what happened was, within a week of that, three different men, I'm not even kidding, chased me down the street to ask me out. Three different ones, like out of nowhere. They were literally running down the street. And I was like, yes. And one of them was like, he chased me into like the Kaiser parking lot. And I was like, yes. And he's like, I'm just here to flirt with you. And I was like, oh, wow. So it's really powerful when we make those shifts in our consciousness, either through a workshop or through therapy or through a book or a podcast episode. it really has an impact. And there's no separation between us and then the world out there. It's very mysterious.
No. Yeah, it is mirroring. Now, what I hear in that is, you know, some part of you said, I have a right to not only be separate, but to belong. Now, so, you know, you said, look, this whole stuff, when someone's always taking a step back, usually it's because somebody didn't have a right to belong and they attracted it because they were safe with not belonging, but some of them really wants it, so they pursue afterwards. But what you did, and it's also part of the book, I talk about this, the soundtrack and the soul lesson, that we have this soundtrack of whatever it is, anxiousness or avoidance, like a music score underneath our life. But when you figure out that what that soundtrack is and you start swapping it out for the music of a secure one, that's called learning your lessons. And there's always a higher self aspect to this. It's not just reptile brain. Some part of you does have to learn your soul lessons from this incarnation or this life, however you look at higher self. So beautifully done, Andrea.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it felt like a revelation. And it was also interesting because I really didn't suffer for the end of this relationship. Within, like, I think about 72 hours, I felt total gratitude for this mm-hmm. man and for what we shared. And because it was exactly what I needed to get that lesson that totally set me free. He was the culmination of every man I had ever chosen for my entire life. And then I was so grateful that he was my witness in that moment, in that powerful moment. And he was generous enough to be present and hold it with me. So it was just total gratitude.
That's beautiful. That's a wonderful example of learning your lessons.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, and for the listeners out there, you might want to kind of look at what's the feeling that's always been there, one or two or three feelings that always seem to be there. Usually that tells you something, what your big soul lesson is. I know for me, it was never belonging. Mm. Yeah. From the time I was born and my mom was so expecting a girl, Andrea, that she didn't name me for 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
You know, I found out I wore pink for the first 6 months of my life.
Oh, because she had already gotten clothes and everything.
Yes. Everything. Yeah. So that explains some things to some people, you know, but there's this anxiousness. When do I get to belong? And then after I had a second divorce, some part of me got to be like, we were, you know, avoidant, right? Like, yeah. I'm not going to go down that road again. For me, the soul lesson came when about 12 years ago, I've always been a man of high, lofty goals and ideals. And I was with a woman I truly loved. And when she broke up with me after a year of frustration of me doing that step back, of me doing the constant sabotage thing, the next morning I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, son, there's only one person that's underneath all of this, and it's you. Mm. And you are hurting people for no good reason.
Oof.
And it was at that point that I said, I have got to stop showing up as Mr. Wrong and whatever it takes. And that's when I said, I had done all that therapy and yet I still hadn't gotten to the core underlying thing. And I said, if it's the last thing I'll do, I'll crack this code. And what you'll learn is when you look at your whole life, you'll see that there's one or two or maybe three of these missing rights, and your soul came to learn a lesson about this and to reclaim them. And when you do, much like yourself, Andrea, things show up better. Because I just don't know how it works, but there is something about a soul level and a brain level way that the universe shows up differently when our brain has different rules of creating reality.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think for some people it probably works really well to have the context be more scientific, and then for other people the more sort of spiritual concepts, you know, resonate more. But either way, just like I think we were talking offline before we started chatting, how really just want people to feel a sense of compassion for wherever they're at and to know that they're not broken or damaged goods, right? That we all have this ability and this desire to grow beyond where we are.
Oh, wrong is, you know, is so wrong.
I know, right?
You know, There's, I start the book with this, and it's important for us to understand that there's a difference between our experience of love, our experience, and what love is. So many people say, well, I just don't trust love, or all men are, or all women are, right? I just had a session yesterday where all men are. But that's an experience in the brain. And the biggest example that came from someone that I call Paul about 8 years ago, he'd been born into a family that, to show you that it's not always abuse, okay, that this is what happens when a four-year-old brain is making decisions about your love style before it gets logic, before it gets all of its neurological components up and running. It's kind of a crapshoot what it does with experience. Paul came to me and said, I'm twice divorced and I'm the family enigma. And I don't understand. My parents are happily married, secure love styles, and they've been married 53 years. My brother and sister have been married 20 and 25 years, and they have. And here I am, I'm anxious, and I've driven away two wives because I'm always afraid, when does love turn on me? Now, that phrase will be important, turn on. When we started doing the deep work, it went back to an incident at four when he was at a campfire. They were all doing the camp thing with the family, and his father turned on him. Never happened before, never happened. It started beating on him. And his little brain says, I don't understand it. Dad was a model father both before and after. But ever since then, I've been scared to death. When does love turn on you? And of course, he drove two women away. They both left saying, I'm tired of you never trusting me. So we worked with that. That's what I had to work. That was the official story. What was the shocker was when a couple months later, he came to one of my workshops and his brother, the older brother, showed up just to be the secure brother who's there for the younger brother, right? And on Saturday, he gets up and shares this story at sharing time. And I am watching his brother's jaw drop to the floor. And it was, and he turned white as a sheet at first. I'm going, wow, that's an interesting reaction his brother's having over there. And then his brother said, Paul, that's why you're so screwed up, though he used another term. He says, you got it all wrong. He says, Dad didn't beat on you. He says, I was nine, you were four. You got too close to the campfire and your pants legs caught on fire.
Oh my
Dad
God.
Turned on you. He was keeping you from turning into a marshmallow.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
The two of them looked at each other. You could have heard a pin drop in the room. This is the crapshoot that a brain can make. Now, you know, it just made up. And so there's such a huge difference between this, you know, this thing called experience in our brain and what is actually happening out there. So my point is that experience has been created in your brain about love. It can be recreated.
Right.
If we swap out those rights, if we swap out those rules and some of those little stories like that and just go back and revisit some of what I call those crapshoot moments, right? We can update your brain and then suddenly experience changes. And it's not about life. It's not about love. It's about the experience in your brain. Because our brains, if you remember Star Trek, are just one big holodeck creating things up. And the point is, if you can create one reality, you have the authority and I think the responsibility of your own self and your soul and the people you have to create another. And that's what's safe to love us against. That's what secure is about, creating the experience you want for yourself and the people you love in a way that love feels comfortable and juicy and warm and inviting and cozy and everything else.
That's so beautiful. And wow, that story is massive in my mind right now. And it's such a great example and also makes me think, you know, as a parent of two small boys and, you know, you wonder like, what were those moments that where I inflicted damage unwittingly and what were those crapshoot moments for my kids already? And so to have that compassion both for ourselves and for our caregivers who, you know, may or may not have done a great job, but, you know, we're all just kind of doing our best and we're all making up stories in the face of our circumstances that are unfolding.
Exactly. And, you know, and one of the things, and we just kind of noticed that Paul's dad didn't have anything to do with this. There was, you know, it was just a four-year-old brain doing what four-year-old brains do, and that they're not very logical. And we know from attachment theory, this is one of the things that the story a parent tells about their life, it can be an anxious or an avoidance story, anxious, or, you know, there's a lot of preoccupation with past pain, avoidance. There's not a lot of connective or emotion, and the secure are able to say, yeah, that was a learning experience or whatever. You know, that story predicts the attachment style of your children with 85% percentage of validity. 85% of the time a parent tells a story about love, it will be passed down to children. And we can track this for 5, 6, 7 generations. So the story we tell about ourselves, we can think, oh, it's just my story. It gets passed down as a family heirloom. So it's really important to look at that story we say and to tell the most secure, kind, compassionate, understanding version of it. Not to, you know, hey, you know, that's a lesson I learned, you know? So you know, it's not always those crapshoot moments. We don't want to take too much responsibility as parents for.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. This is so incredible. I feel like I could talk to you forever about this, but maybe we should all just read your book when it comes out and go from there. When does the book come out?
Well, I'm talking to a literary agent on Friday. I'm hoping it comes out soon, within a year. It's
awesome.
All everything. But there is a way you can get some of the big ideas.
Oh, good. How's that?
I have a kind of a video version of it, little short 2 to 4 minute videos, along with some other love experts. It's called Love Notes from Dr. Gary on my website. If you go to www.garysalyer.com, you'll go on the right sidebar and you'll get 2 a week. And I go over every major concept in a very inspiring way so that you can have a really good idea of what it feels like to be securely loved. And basically, your new GPS for being loved is your brain uses 4 feelings to know when it's really loved. That's the heart and soul of the book. Are you welcomed with joy? Are you worthy and nourished? Are you cherished and protected and empowered with choice? If you feel those 4 feelings, that's your brain saying this. It's not tall, dark, and handsome, makes this much money. Those are all eye candy things. What tells you're securely loved. And what tells you're in a good relationship. So if one of those is missing, you're thinking, gosh, we should do a workshop. If 2 are missing, you're thinking, what's my girlfriend's therapist number? And if there's 3 or 4, you're in a toxic relationship. So your new GPS for love is using the 4 feelings your brain has been using since you're 1 year old from attachment science to navigate when it knows it's securely loved. If you use those as your new GPS for love and you're aware of it, and I tell them that, all about that in these love notes, then you're able to date and navigate a relationship with a whole lot more clarity. You're not taking guesses. You know you're following your brain's natural, secure love style.
And oh my God, that is so good. Can you repeat those 4 love feelings for us?
Yes, I will. The 4, from the time a child is 1 year old, we know what their love style is. And at 1, they're not running stories. They're not running beliefs, limiting beliefs. They're just running feelings. And those feelings are welcomed with joy. Honey, so glad to see you. Oh, so great being on this podcast. You know, good morning, handsome. That's what welcome with joy looks like. Worthy and nourished. To have your needs met. When you just have that luxuriant feeling that someone's noticing your needs, your preferences, your patterns, and when you reach out and ask for support, they're going to be there for you. Well, of course, honey, what do you need tonight? You know, and making sure that what you need shows up even when you don't ask it. That's worthy. Cherished and protected is that feeling like someone's got my back. I can do the high wire act of my greatest aspirations, and I have a safety net below me. I get to have a secure base. I go out and explore, but I can come home and Sonny says, how was your day? Or, you know, will you feel cherished and protected? You know, get to be a me and a we, and then empowered with choice and voice, where someone says, you have a right to create your experience with me, and I will support that. You can talk to me, and I will listen, and I will listen without judgment, without criticism, without defensiveness or stonewalling. When you have those four feelings of welcomed with joy, worthy and nourished, cherished and protected, and empowered with choice, if you have those running in your relationship, and you attract and you only give and receive those, a secure, that's when you know you have a secure love style, when you give and receive only those four. That's what makes an extraordinary couple too.
Oh my God. You just totally changed my life with that, with just that nugget alone, because I think I've had this sort of story or this idea that, like, I don't know what a healthy love relationship looks like or feels like. So how do I get clear on what I'm looking for or what I'm wanting? But this, as my new GPS, is so beautiful and so helpful. And like you were saying, it doesn't get into the trap of like, well, they have to be this tall and they have to have this kind of job. It's like, no, you want to feel those four primary feelings, and that's what healthy love relationship looks like and feels like.
Yeah, and they reflect those rights. When someone has a beautiful right to exist, they feel welcome with joy. What's the first thing you do to a little baby? Ooh, I'm so glad to see you.
Right, exactly. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, so glad you're here. Oh my God, you're here. You know, we've been waiting for you. But when you're worthy, that's the right to have your needs met. When you're cherished and protected, that's the right to separate and belong. And then, of course, empowered with choice is the right to create your own experience and a right to assert. When those feelings are your reference feelings, and it's not something else like unworthy or anxious, right? Mm-hmm. Or unwelcome. When those four feelings are driving your system, so that you will only look for men and women who have those characteristics and give you those feelings, and in a relationship you're looking for them, that's the day you've reclaimed an earned, secure love style. And of course, there's some personal work to get your brain to do that. That's the work that I do. I go in and I swap out rights so people can run those four feelings. But when you have them, those are the feelings that control over. I'm always looking for couples. I actually have a little diagnosis. I give them, I go, how are these going? And you can tell right away pretty much what their missing rights are by how they're interacting and which feelings are missing in the relationship. So it becomes a beautiful GPS. I'll tell you a cute story. You can even teach these to children. Mm. I had a couple that came to me and I work with them. And I used to have coffee cups with these four feelings on them, right? And they began to teach them to their 3 and their 5-year-old, Andrea. And then they tell me, once she goes, it's so cute. We've been teaching them the four feelings, our two boys. Well, the other day, the 3-year-old takes a truck and whacks the 5-year-old. And the 5-year-old says, I don't feel very cherished and protected.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Now, that's beautiful. What that in 20 years when he's with a woman. Imagine what he's going to be running with her. Someone's going to have a very, very, or is going to be a very, very fortunate woman.
Yeah. Right?
And I also know of another parent that I work with, and he had been through a terrible divorce, and they got the custody back from a truly borderline mate. It was horrible. One child had an avoidant, the other had an insecure. And he goes, okay, I'm doing my work. What can I do for my children? So I thought, well, they were young, like I think 5 and 7 at the time. I said, okay, let's use the coffee cups as sippy cups. And every week, so over supper, you have your cups out. And I want you to, for 1 week a month, all you do is talk and share and talk about how we can make each other feel welcomed with joy. Second week of the month, worthy and nourished. Third week of the month, cherished and protected. Fourth week of the empowered. And that's all they did for a whole week. And he did that for 6 months. At the 5-month point, things began to shift. They started calming down. They started getting more secure. And the little girl went to school and saw a teacher having kind of a bad day. And the little girl looks at the father and says, "Daddy, I don't think she's doing a lot of good things with Welcome with Joy right now."
Mm. Oh, it's beautiful.
You know, so if you have children, your brain will naturally take this, you know, because it's the natural thing. So imagine if a little child's brain will take it, so will yours. So
absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. You got to get those mugs back because I want one. but in the meantime, everyone, you should sign up for Gary's Love Notes and watch those videos. I know I will be doing that this week. And just so grateful for you and for your work and for your time today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. This is and thank you for the incredible, experience of being able to and the privilege of being able to share with you and your community. And I love the energy I hear from you. You're doing great work in the world. And, you know, love needs a helping hand. And I'm just glad that we can both give love a helping hand today.
Aw, thank you.